Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Good evening. Welcome back to WGN Radio. Hannah Stanley sitting in tonight for Dave Plyer. It is a thrill to get to be with you guys whenever I am able to. Joining me right now, you've heard her on with me before, renowned pediatrician, Dr. Erin Schutte. Erin, thank you so much for spending time with us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Hannah.
Absolutely. Now, the reason, there's a couple of reasons why I wanted you on as a guest tonight. Specifically, the first one is I read about a study this past week, and I see so many things about screen time and I'm a mom. I've got now I have an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old, so I'm very conscientious. But most of the things I read about are opinion pieces from moms or, you know, maybe teachers even. And while they have very valid opinions, likely it's not an actual study on the effects of screen time. This article was about an actual legitimate study with scientific basis. And then you mentioned it randomly the same week. Tell me about this study, if you would.
Right. So the study you're talking about is called the ABCD study. It's the Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study, which is actually a much larger study by the NIH and several other organizations looking at all kinds of things and how they impact the developing brains of kids and adolescents as they're growing into young adulthood. So it's also looking at things like substance use, sleep, exercise, genetic differences, environmental differences. But among these things, it is looking at screen time and video games. And so they just completed enrolling people in the last year, and it's actually going to be ongoing. But I think the information that has caught our attention is they just recently, within the last week, released some preliminary data showing a subset of the kids that they enrolled at. This was about 4,500 kids, and they were ages about 9 to 11. When they looked at MRI imaging of kids who spent excessive amount of screen time, and for this particular part, that was over 7 hours a day, which sounds like a lot, but, you know, it's actually not outside the realm of what we're seeing a lot of. There were physical structural changes in the brain, specifically thinning of the cortex. So this is a correlation. It's, you know, we can't prove causation, but it's interesting and something that certainly needs to be looked at further.
So they were having thinning of the cortex. What exactly does that mean in, oh my gosh, that could damage my child terms?
Right. Well, to some extent, some thinning of the cortex does happen developmentally, but it seems to happen later. And so it's a decreasing of the volume of the outer layer of the brain, but that's a really important part of the brain. We get concerned about emotional regulation, things like that, executive function, planning. So it's important for kids as they're developing and getting older. And so it looks like it is perhaps altering, you know, the pace at which these changes are happening. It's too early to say what that means, but it's, you know, it's made some people take a look at that and think, you know, what could this mean? What should we be thinking about? And it probably needs to be looked at further.
Yeah, 7 hours a day seems, I mean, that's almost a full-time job, but a lot of times, the kids wake up and they're either on their tablets or they've got the TV on while they're eating Cheerios. I would hope that's a decent enough breakfast, but, that's an hour before school. Then they come home. A lot of times they're either doing homework, engaging with a screen, which is acceptable, of course, but that would probably add to it. And then they've got, let's say, 3 to 4 hours of TV time. We're at like 7 hours right there. That's not that.
Yeah, even on a school day, it can add up. It's not that hard to do. And I think even as adults, if any of us have looked at the little monitoring apps on our own devices and looked at the actual hours, we don't even realize it. It's just become a part of our daily lives. And the same is true for our kids that have grown up in this environment. So it's easy to rack up that amount of time. Then you look at a weekend. So it sounds like a lot when you hear it, but it's actually not unheard of for a lot of kids.
Well, and we were always warned against, growing up, too much TV. And God forbid you sat too close to it, because the radiation was going to kill you.
Yes.
But is this something that they studied when we were growing up about the TV time, or is this something that's just kind of now they're like, no, this is everywhere. We have to start working on this.
You know, I think there's always been a tendency with new technology to have some panic. So I think I was reading that even when radio first came out, there was worry about, well, what's exposure to too much radio going to do to people's brains?
Radio is totally fine, Dr. Shudi.
I think radio is fantastic all day long. but, you know, so I'm not sure that they, you know, I don't know the data per se on TV. But here's the thing, you know, maybe it's not so much what medium it is that you're staring at, but it displaces other things that kids should be doing. You know, kids and adolescents need 9 to 11 hours of sleep at night. They need an hour of physical activity, vigorous physical activity a day. You know, they need to go to school and they need to be playing with friends. They need to be talking to their families. They should be doing creative endeavors, playing with Legos, drawing, being artistic, you name it. And so it's kind of concerning, really, that it's just displacing these other things that they should be doing.
Okay, so if we have an app that does something, is that that's still teaching them? So instead of playing with Legos, they're like doing something with Legos on their app. Is that not teaching them still? Like even the educational apps?
Right. I think we don't know. I mean, okay. You know, there's so much out there that qualifies as screen time. And certainly some of it is educational to some extent. You know, the schools are using it. My kids at their school, you didn't know there's certain programs and websites that they're using for math and things like that. And I think there's value to that. So we don't really, you know, we're kind of throwing it all in one basket. And sure, some things probably have more value than others, but it still is time sitting on your rear end. So you have to take that into account.
All right. And the biggest story in all of screen time that I've ever heard has been this past year with Fortnite. And they've recently disclosed, or someone has studied this, that they have programmed it so it's like Vegas. That's why everybody's addicted to this.
Yeah. And our phones are much the same way. I mean, they're designed to get us interacting with them more and more. So alerts, notifications, you know, do I have a new message? Is there a new like? It's a reward system that's just like the slot machines. Like maybe this time when I check, it'll be there, maybe it won't. And it just reinforces you going back and doing it more and more. So that the same holds true for a lot of these games. And yeah, that's an addictive behavior. You know, these are young kids that we're kind of running this grand experiment on. So we need to be thoughtful about it. And what's interesting about this study is that it's looking at kids that age. I mean, the 9 to 11-year-olds, they're the ones that have come up entirely in the era of the smartphone, you know, the iPads being everywhere, things like that.
Wow. So this is a study, as you mentioned, by the National Institute of Health. It's called the ABCD study. People, you guys can Google it, look it up. It's how many years are they doing this for?
So they said they're studying them into young adulthood. So I would think that's at least probably another 10 years. So a longitudinal study to kind of follow lots of different things over time. And again, I'd like to remind people that correlation is not causation. Just because two things happen at the same time doesn't mean they're causal. You know, some people have raised the concern, well, you know, we hear about things like anxiety and depression with screen time. Well, is it that the screen time is causing that? Or is it that if you're more anxious and depressed, you're more likely to just gravitate toward a screen versus, you know, branching out with friends, you know, so sometimes we don't know the chicken or the egg, but we still need to be thoughtful about it. We still need to be investigating it.
Well, it's nice that they're putting like full on science in this long-term study with a large group of kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is very exciting. We are going to come back and talk to you more about something that's been controversial and has gotten a lot of good and bad press, which is the HPV shot, speaking of those adolescents. So that'll be next. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Dave Plyer here on WGN. Right back after this. Welcome back. It is WGN Radio. Hannah Stanley sitting in tonight for Dave Plyer. I will be with you guys until 5 a.m. Continuing our conversation right now with renowned pediatrician, Dr. Aaron Shudi. We were just talking about the ABCD study, which is a long-term study on a large group of adolescents and the effects of screen time and other environmental things going on and what that does to their development and their brain. But something else that has been in the news and on a lot of people's news feeds, which is almost more important, is the HPV shot. Dr. Schutte, tell me what that is for those who don't know, please.
So the HPV vaccine is a vaccination against the human papillomavirus. And this is an extremely common infection that most adults will have in their lifetime. 80 to approaching 90% of people will come in contact with this virus in their lifetime. And it is associated with 6 different types of cancer. So this is a cancer prevention shot, which is so exciting. Anyone who has, you know, had to watch a family member or friend go through cancer can only imagine how nice it would be to be able to prevent that. So this vaccine is given in the early adolescent time frame, standardly at like the 6th grade physical, 11 to 12 years old. We like to have it done before age 13. You can give it as early as 9 years old. But this is the type of thing that is, it's incredibly safe. Unfortunately, you know, like a lot of things with social media, there's been bad press in terms of crazy stories that are out there. And it's a vaccine that is as safe as any of our other vaccines. It does not have any untoward effects that are different really than any of the other vaccines. Very well tolerated and really important. You know, we think about it as a cervical cancer prevention shot, and January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. So that's, you know, it's incredibly important to prevent those cancers, but we're also vaccinating boys, and it's not just to prevent the spread of cervical cancer, but what we're finding is actually by number of cancers diagnosed in the United States, head and neck cancers have overtaken cervical cancer. So, and that predominantly affects men. Thanks to cervical cancer screening, people getting their PAPs and their yearly exams, the number of actual cancer cases has gone down, and usually we're catching those as at an earlier stage when they're precancerous lesions and more easily treated. But the fact remains that the head and neck cancers are really on a sharp rise, a sharp incline, and so we really need to get all our young people vaccinated against this infection because, like I said, it's a human infection. It's very common, and it's something we can have a big impact on.
Is it a one-time inoculation, a one-time immunization, or is it a multi-stage one?
So it's 2 doses. Okay. They're 6 to 12 months apart. So I like to do them, you know, anywhere, usually around 11 and then at the 12-year-old dose. If you wait, because the pre-adolescent immune system is such a powerhouse, if you get it when they're younger, they make a much better response. It's a much more robust immune response. If you wait until later adolescence, after you're 14, if you're 15 or older, you actually need 3 doses to get the same effect. So sometimes, you know, parents will have the concern, why are we doing this so early? But that's the reason. We're really harnessing the power of their child's immune system at that critical stage to get the best impact that we can.
All right. When the people who have been spreading misinformation, is this anything? Are they really just? And I haven't read a ton of it. I have read it when the shot first came out to see what it was all about. Mm-hmm. But they were, you know, spreading all kinds of different things, not really preventing it. It's toxic. It's this. It's that. That's not based in fact. Right? Or am I...
Correct.
Okay. They're just making things up.
You're 100% correct.
All right.
Unfortunately, that's the case. It's very well studied, as with all our vaccines. Side effects and adverse effects are followed very closely. So we have very good data on the excellent safety of the vaccine. Hundreds of millions of doses have been administered worldwide. The main side effects are a little soreness at the injection site. Sometimes a little headache, sometimes feeling a little faint, but those are the same for the other adolescent vaccines, so it's not any different.
All right, why you said that there could be fainting for adolescent shots?
Yeah.
Is that a new thing for mm-hmm. adolescents? I don't know this.
You know, I'm not sure that we 100% know why it is. What a lot of us think is a lot of the times the kids come in and, you know, maybe they haven't eaten, maybe they didn't have an after-school snack. Sometimes they haven't eaten all day. I always ask my teenagers and early adolescents, like, did you have breakfast today? Did you have an after-school snack? Because sometimes the answer is no. So I think it's running around crazy schedules, not being maybe fully hydrated. you know, when you're older, your parents don't have as much control over every little thing you're doing to take care of yourself. Like the little ones, you know, moms and dads are on top of what they're eating and drinking and all that. When they're older, kids are off at school, we don't really know what they're up to in terms of staying hydrated and getting snacks. And, you know, also, some of it seems to be kind of like the needle fear factor, just like some adults and other people, if you go to give blood or something like that, people get faint at the sight of blood or a needle. There's some of that going on as well, because there's increased awareness as kids get older, you know, about what a shot is and things like that. So it's a combination of those factors, we think.
All right. Yeah. When you said that just now, I was like, wait, what? I didn't know this. Okay. Good things to look forward to next time I have my my 11-year-old at the pediatrician. Good times. Yes. All right. Now, as you mentioned, that HPV shot is preventing, is it up to, or it is preventing or could prevent six types of cancer?
Six types of cancer. Yeah.
All right.
And so that, pretty impressive.
It is impressive. Is it only for adolescents, or is this something that people can, like adults can get in line for if they have not already been exposed to this virus?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Right now, at this very moment, up till age 26, but it's recently been FDA approved, I understand, up until age 45. It's still, from what I understand, and because I don't take care of adults, I'm not 100% on this, it's still in the works to be fully rolled out, and I think to have the insurance coverage and all that good stuff for people up to age 45.
Right.
But that's coming. But right now, definitely up until age 26.
Now, if you've already been exposed to this virus, can you still have the shot, or is it something that you have?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, it is thought to still have some benefit because presumably most people, you know, even by their 40s have probably been exposed to it. But in the off chance that you haven't, or even if you have, a booster in your ability to fight off that virus is going to help.
All right. I will say I have a friend who has fought cancer four times, three of which could have possibly been prevented by this shot had she had it. Like 2-3 years ago, I actually was interviewing her, and off the air, she said, by the way, if you don't take your kids to get this shot, I will drive them there myself.
Good for her.
Okay.
I like her.
All right. Well, that choice has been made. So.
Yeah. And I have had patients where the moms have said, you know, I've gone through cervical procedures or things like that, and no way am I going to let that be a possibility for my kids. So absolutely, we're doing this. And really, you know, the public opinion is really turning in the right direction. I find the vast majority of my patients are totally on board. And when they're not, we talk about it. We have a discussion. I answer their questions. And, you know, I think most people, they understand its importance and they go forward.
All right. Speaking of immunizations, the one that we also hear about, especially this time of year, is the flu shot.
Yes.
How is the flu season been this year, and is the shot seeming to be effective?
Yeah, so it's a later flu season in our region. It just seems to be kicking into high gear in the Chicago area. And right now, the H1N1 strain that is circulating is still, it's very similar to the one in the vaccine and the strain that circulated last year. So that bodes well for protection against that. So it's looking good. You know, the flu vaccine gets bad press. You know, people say it's not effective. It's only 30% effective or whatnot. You know, last year in kids, it was actually 60%. And even when you contract influenza after having had the vaccine, I remind people, it keeps you most likely out of the hospital in the ICU, and it keeps you alive. So it's not a failure. It definitely, you know, we think mitigates the disease. It makes it less severe. It shortens the duration. So even if it's not perfect, that influenza virus is super tricky. It's very good at mutating, and there's lots of complex reasons why it's hard to get a perfect flu shot. But even though it's not perfect, it's still really important. You know, you'd rather wear your seatbelt 60% of the time than 0% of the time. So, yeah. And so far, this season's looking hopeful, I think.
All right. That's huge, because I always describe the flu as you think you might die and you're scared you're not going to. It's like it's that gentle balance. It's so bad. And I get my flu shot every year. And so if it's that bad while I've had a flu shot, oh, my goodness, people. But the other question I want to make sure I ask is, when do you know you need to take your kids to the doctor when they might have influenza? How are we looking at that instead of going, oh, I think it's just a bad cold, and then...
Right. Yeah. So, you know, if you're looking at your kid and you're concerned, you should call your doctor or go to the doctor. You know, if it's looking like a run-of-the-mill cold and they're looking generally okay and they're not in a high-risk group, so they're over the age of 5, they don't have a chronic medical condition, they don't have asthma, you can watch it. There's varying opinion on how to manage this. So even among different doctors, some would say, you know, let's test you for flu right away. Let's start Tamiflu. We do want to reserve Tamiflu, the medication that we give to people that have influenza. We want to make sure we have enough for the people that really need it. So there's guidelines for kids, you know, where we really need to give it. And it's not the most pleasant medication to take either. There are some side effects with tummy aches and things like that. So we want to use it judiciously. But, you know, I would say trust your gut. If you're looking at your kid and you're not happy with what's going on and they look pretty miserable, you know, especially if breathing is becoming affected, it's always better to get them checked out than to not.
All right. Renowned pediatrician, Dr. Erin Schutte, thank you so much for your time, for the information. Again, we were talking about the ABCD study, which is, in my opinion, focusing on screen time, because that's what I'm more concerned about than a lot of different things than that. And also the HPV shot and flu shot, because it is flu season. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Dave Plyer here on WGN. I'm going to get you to the news on the other side of this.